Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show, and I've been waiting to interview my guest since I read his book. His name is Paul Van Ward. Von Ward. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you, Nancy.
Now, Paul, before we start talking about your book, and the name of the book is We've Never Been Alone, A History of Extraterrestrial Intervention. But before we start that, because I'm anxious, but before we do, tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, who Paul is, and what prompted you to write a book like this.
Well, I'm an ordinary American who followed a rather traditional professional career for about 30 years of my life. Ended up in college before going into the officer candidate school in the Navy back in 1962 to become a Navy lieutenant, serving during the Vietnam War period, although I did not serve in the Vietnam theater. I was picked up at the end of my 3 years active duty in the Navy to go to Paris as a Foreign Service officer, and I was involved in small way in negotiations that we were undertaking at that time in Paris to shorten the Vietnam War. So that was my contribution to that national effort. Unfortunately, those negotiations didn't work very well. We certainly were not able to shorten the engagement in Vietnam. But I spent time in other diplomatic posts abroad and in management and official positions in the U.S. State Department in Washington, D.C. I got my master's degree. I was then working on a clinical psychology PhD program at Florida State University when I dropped out of that to go into the Navy following JFK's admonition to serve your country, and that's what I did. But while I was in the State Department, I also had the opportunity to go on for another master's degree at Harvard in political psychology, and so I've been something of a psychologist all my life and have been interested in the consciousness of human beings and how we got to be the kind of beings that we are on this planet. But I left the State Department back in 1980, wrote my first book, which was called Dismantling the Pyramid, Government by the People. It was way ahead of its time, analyzed a lot of the problems that we're now seeing come to the forefront in our overblown governmental system and all of the assumptions that we make about how to have a democratic citizen participatory democracy. But anyhow, during those years, I kept reading and reading from my young clinical psychology courses in Florida State back in the early 60s. I was always interested in sort of the parapsychological aspect of things. Carl Jung and all of those traditions of looking at human consciousness in another way, and seeing a bigger picture, something beyond the physical conditioning that was being taught in graduate school in those days, that humans are just the results of reinforcement and punishment, and they turn out a personality based on that environmental experience. But I always felt that humans were much more than that, that we were transcendent beings and that we had multidimensional aspects to our mind and to our existence on the planet. And so about 1980, I really began to break out of that traditional mode and started becoming very active in the Association for Humanistic Psychology, working on parapsychological themes and beginning to experience for myself. And I became very active in groups that were studying other consciousness. And the beginning, it was the post-war World War II era of UFOs and ETs, and became very active in that whole field, learning as much as I could. But I became even more interested in the ancient astronaut theory, the Erich von Däniken book, and then, of course, later on, friends from the Library of Congress in Washington introduced me to Zachariah Sitchin's work, and I began to look much more into the ancient text. And that started back in the 80s, but I was still having to manage a nonprofit, an international nonprofit that I founded in 1980 to do citizen diplomacy and international development programs. And we were working on citizen exchanges with the Soviet Union and joint ventures with Russia and the, and China as well. And so I was doing half a day my research and half the day trying to manage that operation. But in 1995, I dedicated myself full-time to do this research and have written about four books in the last 15 years about this topic. That's a little long introduction. I'm sorry about that.
But, no, it's good. It's good, Paul. And the reason why it's good is because some of the things we're going to talk about today, I'm sure there are going to be some people out there listening are going to go, this guy is just absolutely nuts and so is the host. And that's okay. Okay, because that makes for a little bit more interesting topic. But I asked you to do that because it shows your credentials, and that's important to a lot of people. Okay, so I read your book, and again, it's called We've Never Been Alone, A History of Extraterrestrial Intervention. And it is a very in-depth book, and some people would pick it up and go, oh, my God, and they'd probably put it back down. But I found it very interesting, and the reason why I did is because a lot of the stuff that you have in your book, I have known or figured that I've known for a very long time. How I know, I don't know, but that's where I come from. You know, but we're going to go through your book a little bit, you know, because in an hour, believe me, we'll not get us all the way through your book. But we're going to go through some questions that I think that the people out there may be interested in hearing about. They may not agree with it, and again, that's okay because I have that firm idea that it's okay to agree to disagree. And so with that, we'll just start. So in your book, you start off by talking about ABs. Now, ABs to you is advanced beings. Now, so are ABs and ETs the same to you, or, you know, is it just different letters?
Well, I'm trying to get us to think in broader terms about non-human intelligence, non-human life forms. And also, as I'm sure many of your listeners are aware, we have moved in science to the point where we actually are now talking about a multidimensional universe, maybe even a multiverse where there are different universes. So what I'm trying to convey with this notion of advanced beings or ABs is that they are all conscious beings that we have had contact with over the millennia and maybe millions of years in our history on this planet. And some of them are physical. They've been very much like ourselves. We've had sex with them. They've been colonizers of us. We've been slaves to them. We have learned things from them. We have collaborated with them. They have used us in various ways. But we're also engaged with all kinds of beings who are not just physical on the planet. They may be communicating with us from other planetary systems in a telepathic form of communication, or maybe they are not even physical beings at this point in time, but are beings who are simply energetic fields of consciousness. And we have people today, and we've had them throughout history, who have spoken to humans through our mind. We call it channeling. We call it visions. I mean, Yahweh, who was the instigator of the development of the Hebrew tradition and what we call the Judaism religious perspective today, that came from a being who did not reveal himself directly to Moses and the other people who were participating in the Exodus from Egypt. So that's an AB. It was a definitive being, and I happen to believe, and I've written about that in the book that you mentioned, Nancy, that Yahweh actually was one of the Anunnaki, or the Elohim, who were the earlier gods involved in some of our genetic manipulation that we as Homo erectus type beings were upgraded, if you want to use that term, in some ways, physically and mentally, by this Anunnaki, Elohim, set of beings. They were physical, tangible beings on the planet Earth. But we've also had Gabriel, for example, the voice that spoke to Mohammed that led to our modern day religion of Islam. This was not a physical being standing in front of him, as was the case when Abraham and the other early Judeo leaders actually walked and talked with the gods of old. And it's right down today. In my research, I'm following half a dozen different people who are receiving information about not only our own history, but about our multidimensionality as human beings. I'm following people who are getting information from extraplanetary beings who claim that they're energetic now. They're not physical. They've sort of ascended on to another area. So all of these beings are advanced in one way over humans. That is, we cannot contact them. They contact us. And that doesn't mean they're advanced in every way. We may have some morals that are better than their morals. We may have some understandings about things that they don't understand. We may have some physical skills that they don't have. But it's that interaction between these more advanced beings from whom we've learned a lot and from whom we have had a lot of suffering. And that's what I mean by ABs and advanced being. A long answer, but sorry, that's the way it is.
No. They need to be long sometimes, Paul, so don't worry about that. You know, I found your book kind of fascinating because you actually go back and a long, long time. You know, not just 2,000 years, not just 6,000 years. I mean, you go back a long, long way. And so I've always had a problem with the way the Bible has been put out to people and how many, many people think that they have to follow that exactly to a T, whether they do or not, and all of that comes out through religion. And so when I was 6 years old, Paul, I had a very freak accident. I landed with my head and neck under my back. So by all rights, I should be dead or paralyzed, and I'm neither one. But what happened to me is that from that time on, all the way through now, I've had different voices talking to me, but there's been like one main voice. I call them my angels. I don't ask who they are. I don't really care who they are. But the information that they have given me is pretty much right on. And when I don't follow what they tell me, I get slapped pretty hard, you know. And that's okay, because I've got to learn somehow. I am human, mostly. You know, so I find it very interesting that you went back so far, because most people can't fathom that this planet has been here for millions and millions and millions of years, and that we've not, you know, we're not the first inhabitants here, that, you know, it was inhabited by different kinds of things, and we're not, quote, the first human type, you know, substance, let's call it, that has been put here. And your book goes back and it describes a lot of how it all came to be. So if you can, go back just a little bit and talk about how the Anunnakis, for example, you know, were here and how people were really formed, because I don't think people are getting the right information most of the time. And I think they have a hard time believing the true information. That's why I said a lot of people probably would not agree with some of the things in your book. But right. I happen to relate to it very well. So go back just a little bit. Talk about the Anunnakis. Who were they? Why were they
okay.
here? And what
okay,
did they
well,
do
let,
for
let me, before I get into the Anunnaki, let me say that there are other books out there that go even further back in time. You know, the work that Michael Cremo and Richard Thompson did with their Hidden History of the Human Race. We don't know whether those were humans, but literally hundreds of thousands of years ago and millions of years ago, we have artifacts on this earth that can be dated to advanced civilizations way beyond anything that even I'm focusing on. But what I decided to focus on in this book was to start with what we see as ourselves as Homo sapiens and Homo sapiens sapiens. And we have a lot of fossil record evidence. We have a lot of other genetic evidence to indicate that the physical beings that we are today really arose about 250,000 years ago. Now, it could be 300,000, it could be 200,000, but it's somewhere about 250,000 years ago, because the fossil record makes it clear that we had beings who were conscious and intelligent. We call them Homo erectus and other types, but basically they are hominoids like us. They were brutish in physical terms. I mean, we have the bones and skulls and so on to suggest that. But they were also civil beings. They also had culture. We found their burial grounds. We've found their art. We found their artifacts to suggest that these were people who were probably living right along beside even more advanced beings that could have been in the history that we know as the Lemurian or Atlantean history. And I won't talk about that because that's another far back. But about 250,000 years ago, the Anunnaki, and I use two terms for them. Actually, different cultures have different labels. But the Sumerian text called them Anunnaki. The Hebrew text called them the Elohim. They're the same. It's the advanced beings from some other planet. They were somewhat similar to us. And the reason I say that is because after the genetic manipulation that had our really a, it wasn't an evolution. It was a quick leap from Homo erectus to Homo sapiens with a different body set of genotype factors. Obviously, we were educated and upgraded in terms of information knowledge. And this is a story that Zachariah Sitchin has written a lot about. The work that Eric von Daniken has done for the last 40 years talks about really this side of the story. But what I tried to do was to say, okay, if these guys have found something here, can we corroborate it through other disciplines of research and study? And so that's why the book has a chapter on the fossil record to show that this corroborates this history that we're talking about. The work that geneticists are doing, this also demonstrates that this timeline is there. We look at linguistic, the development of language, and we look at the gene that made our voice capable of doing the kind of conversations that we're doing now. That happened about 200,000 years ago. The first proto-language that linguists talk about was a worldwide Anunnaki Elohim kind of language 100,000 years ago. And then we had something called the Babel of Tower of Babel experience, where the Anunnaki divided humans into their own little tribes and their own little groups of followers, setting up city-states. And that broke human consciousness and human culture into many different fragments. And what I'm trying to convey in the book is that what we are today, with all the conflicts we have among religions and cultures, is the result. And the problems we have with government and power brokers and the rest of us, that is all a function of this history of the Anunnaki and the Elohim.
When they came here, you know, long, long time ago, they decided that they needed people to work basically as slaves in gold mines and stuff like that. Is that part of what history, you know, seems to be headed toward?
Yeah, I think we're getting more and more areas of evidence. When I put the material together for this book, I used, as I mentioned earlier, disciplines that normally don't focus on this notion, but we take genetics, fossil records, anthropology, and so on. I mean, we now have considerable evidence that this all started in South Africa. In fact, now people have discovered mines that have been there for 100,000 years and probably 250,000 years ago. We have evidence of their habitation, and we look at the language, we look at the aboriginals, we look at the genetics of this South African part of the planet, and we see that this was a slave labor colony. And the whole process of the Anunnaki and the Elohim, down through that couple of hundred thousand years up till modern times, which I date about 11,500, 12,000 years ago, when we had the worldwide cataclysm that the Bible calls the flood, and other parts of the world talk about it as the volcanoes and the tsunamis and so on, because it was a worldwide cataclysm. So what I'm focusing on in the first part of the book is that period before the cataclysm. And that period for a couple hundred thousand years was basically we were the colonists, we were the colonized, and the ABs were the colonial rulers, just like the European advanced societies colonized the Americas and Africa and parts of Africa, parts of Asia. So that's, we can understand what was going on during that period by looking at our own human history in the during the last 500 years. So that whole 100,000 to 200,000 years was, first of all, very much labor, slave-oriented. Humans were not given a great deal of freedom or knowledge or information, but that changed over time. And other AB installations in the Middle East, in what's now that area between Pakistan and India, the India Indus River, the Tian Shan Plateau in western China, the Andes in South America. We had these advanced civilizations with the ABs directly being the rulers, the kings, the dictators, whatever word you want to use, and the humans were being trained. We had technical assistance from them. They taught us about architecture and agriculture and science and all of the traditions around the world. The myths of the early days of civilization describe these kinds of activities. And for that long, long period, humans were either in these AB colonies or they were outside them, independent, and we call them aboriginals. These are the humans who were part of that genetic experiment that didn't stay in the Garden of Edens or the Shambhala retreats, you know, where you had the gods with their high technology and you had a great civilization of, in terms of cities and standards of living. So humans were divided then at that point into aboriginals and those who were the colonized. And that was the way the world was. And the Bible talks about that. It talks about the early days and it talks about Eden and that period. And then it talks about the flood. And so about 12,000 years ago, the situation changed. The ABs had pulled away from the planet because it was going to be subjected to a great deal of damage. That happened, and humans were pretty much wiped off the earth. Some demographers think that, you know, 11 to 12,000 years ago, we may have been down into the thousands, certainly no more than a few million people spread around, scattered around the earth. And they are what we call the survivors, whether it be the people around the Mount Ararat mountain in Turkey, which is apparently where the story of Noah and the Ark came from. And so that was not the only situation that was like that. It was the same in the Andes and China, on the Pacific coast of the United States, a tribe, the Nahomish tribe in Northwest America. They had the same story, and they were told to get in the canoes and head to the mountaintops when the tsunami came, and they did. So after that period, then we have what I call modern history, and what happened over about 4,000 or 5,000 years determined the world that we have today in terms of our separate religions, our separate cultures. It depended on the humans who were benefiting from the ABs who came back to help some of the humans after the cataclysm.
A lot of people have a hard time believing that this planet is going to go through another disastrous state. It's been proven over and over again that history constantly repeats itself until people actually learn. And Nibiru is out there, but the scientists and stuff have known it for a while, and yet they don't talk about it a lot. And they now have to talk about it because there's too many other people discovering it. So do you think that with all the stuff that, let's just call it, the human race has gone through already, that they are bound and determined to repeat the same mistakes that they've made in the past?
Well, I don't think we're bound and determined to make the mistakes that we've made in the past. I think where we are right now is that most humans on the planet are just like they were a few thousand years ago in terms of being colonized. That is, they accept that more advanced beings have control of our destiny. And, of course, what happened about between 2,000 and 3,000 years ago was the creation of supernatural religions. This didn't happen before then because humans, whether they were Homo erectus types or Homo sapiens or Homo sapiens sapiens, whether they were in the colonies or whether they were aboriginals, traditional people living out on the periphery of these civilization centers, they knew these ABs, these gods from the skies, were real beings just like we are, except that they were more advanced. But when the ABs began to pull away, as they did about 4,500 years ago, more or less, when they left humans to their own devices. And what they left was a system where the kings, the people who were being left with the power in these various areas, whether it's Egypt or Babylon or Jerusalem or China or Cusco and Peru or, you know, wherever it might have been. But these were the sort of more it's sort of an oxymoron to say it, but the more pure hybrids. That is, the direct descendants of sexual relations between the gods and the daughters of men. Now, I say it's that sort of silly term because all we are as humans today we're partial genetic representations of the ABs as we are with the earthbound Homo sapien strain of conscious beings on this planet. But they were ruling these hybrid. We call them, you know, the royal bloods, and there are different terms for that. But they and the priests that were working with them began to try to keep control over the humans by beginning to say, well, the gods are coming back and there's going to be a return. And then when they didn't come back and take over the direct rule of the planet Earth, they began to translate these stories of the actual beings into what we now today call divine beings. Well, there are no divine beings in the universe. I mean, the universe is a natural organism. Every being, whether we're 3D, 4D, another dimensional, we're all natural products of the creative forces that created the universe in the first place. So then that created our supernatural religions that we have, so that you keep control over humans by saying, we've got the true religion, we've got the true God, and if you're a part of our religion, then you're okay because you're going to enjoy a heavenly eternal existence when the end of times come here. And so this has kept humans subservient, narrow-minded, thinking they were special about things, even though they could see people in other cultures and other places and across the street from them, having the same beliefs about their own religion. So if we don't come together and re-examine this history of humans, and the story that I'm trying to articulate here, yes, the same thing will happen again. We will have a cataclysm, because in the universe you have cycles and cycles, and they are physical and they're going to happen, every so often. And either we're prepared for the cataclysm or we're not. And at this point in time, we're not prepared. And the only way we can get prepared is to begin to look at our, what I would call a more accurate story of our history, and begin to take on the responsibility ourselves to manage the way we are interacting with the planet. I mean, in my view, we are contributing to the danger that we're facing in terms of a cataclysm that involves climatic, geomagnetic, atmospheric. We have these forces converging on our future. And, of course, a few people who are in the know are trying to gather up resources and build themselves, you know, safe spaceships or tunnels underground or biospheres in the ocean. I mean, people are trying to do these things, but the mass of humans are still squabbling among ourselves rather than looking at who we really are and how we got to this point. And so we're likely to be like the Atlanteans 12,000 years ago. A few of them would be left. They would have memories of a great civilization, but they wouldn't have the technology. They wouldn't have the resources to come back. And so I'm hoping that some of us will think about this, try to leave the record, try to leave examples of the technology, trying to leave a real history of our demise on this planet, so that the survivors, and I hope there will be survivors, can start off with a much better hand to play than, you know, we had 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, but you said one word there that's really important, and I think people have a really hard time with that one word, and that's called responsibility, because human nature, appears, has dictated that somebody else is going to take care of it for you, and so there's a lack of responsibility, and I don't think people realize that if they don't take the responsibility, yes, somebody else will take care of it for them. They may not like the outcome, but exactly. Yes, somebody is going to take care of that. You know, so, you know, everybody is worried, Paul, about 2012, because, God forbid, the Mayan calendar ends, okay? What I don't think people realize is that the Mayan calendar is somewhat off, and that a lot of the stuff that's in the Mayan calendar and all the predictions that's gone on have already started. They started back at the end of 2009 as to what's coming. Then we come up with, you know, the statistics of Planet X, Nibiru coming in and turning the planet all upside down, and everybody's going to die that way. And there are still people out there who refuse to believe that anything could possibly happen to this planet. And so I think the majority of the people, Paul, if they would wake up and take the responsibility, they would find themselves in a much better place. However, that's that word, that responsibility.
That's the key. That's the very key that we're trying to convey with this history of our being a colonized race. See, when you colonize a race, a species in this case, the colonizers, the advanced beings, you know, they've got all the power, the knowledge, and they can move out and find safe havens elsewhere. But the rest of us can't do that. And what we've done is that we have psychologically become this dependent, subservient, lacking any vision of our own role to play. We looked for somebody else to bail us out. And what's happened with this creation of supernatural religions over the last couple of thousand years is that we've now said, oh, well, the gods are going to take care of it. Our God, my God, is going to take care of it. Not your God, but my God will take care of it. And they've created this myth, you know, that, well, when the cataclysm comes, well, then God is going to come down and swoop down and pick up the humans that are believers of that particular religion, and those will be saved and everybody else will not be. Well, it doesn't work that way. We're talking about a cataclysm that is global. We're talking about forces that are not governed by this supernatural mentality. It's a part of the cycles of the universe, and we have let ourselves be fooled by the prophets, by the people who say all you have to do is just sit tight and say the ritual phrases that our religion wants you to say, and you'll be taken care of. And so we don't pay attention then. We don't prepare ourselves. And it's interesting, you know, that Jesus and Buddha and Lao Tzu, these teachers who were trying to tell us that, you know, we are the creatures of the universe, we are responsible for ourselves, and we have to take responsibility, just as you've mentioned. And what I'm trying to do with this book is to, I think, counter what you're talking about, this notion of passivity, oh, we can do nothing about it, and we don't need to do anything about it because we believe in the right God, and in the very last minute, that God's going to take us away from all of this destruction. Well, I do believe, as you know from my other work in reincarnation and human consciousness, that we do survive physical cataclysms at another level of consciousness, but that's not going to do us any good in terms of living on this planet and our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. The future we're leaving for them is not a very, how do I say? It's not what we would like to inherit ourselves.
Right. But the thing is, Paul, you know, I look around and you know, I see the people who are, you know, occupying Wall Street, but they don't have a direct cause. It's everybody's taken up their own cause. So at least some people are starting to pay attention, although they're not really together with what they say. But that's not an answer, because again, that's, you know, there's some countries that are in riots over this, and then there's people here in this country that are going off the deep end and all kinds of stuff, which I guess is normal. You know, so I think everybody really has to take a really good look inside their own heart here, Paul, and figure out who, number one, they really are, what their true belief is without being brainwashed, what their true responsibility is, and then find a way to answer all those questions for themselves and then follow it. And that, again, you know, people have a hard time because somebody's got to lead, and as soon as somebody starts to lead, everybody's going to follow, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
People's got to wake up. You know, it really doesn't work like that. And unfortunately, you know, our planet, to me, you know, they call all the stuff that's been gone, that's done here, as, you know, getting ahead of it. And I really call it destruction, because people haven't got it. They don't get it. You know, it's like, what can I get? Or who am I going to get this from so I can have this? You know, and it's got to stop. And if it's going to take another time, like what the Earth has been through several times already, in order to, again, wipe out what the beliefs have been to restart a new belief, then, you know, that's what the planet's going to have to do, because we're basically killing the planet with what we've done.
Well, know? I think we are. I think, you know, in terms of physical terms, we are facing a I hope it's not an extinction of the species. But it's happened several times now where you had this choke point in history where only a few people survive. And I think, you know, even if we feel that we as an individual or individuals may not survive the cataclysm, We ought to try to leave the best legacy that we can in terms of making sure that people know that we can, as humans, possibly survive and create a new cycle on this planet. And but to do that, we've got to drop these barriers and these. I was out at a parade in our little town over the weekend, and people were walking up and down the street in the parade and so on, talking about, you know, the end times and they're coming and you got to believe this, and if you don't believe this for these four words, you know, you're lost and so on. And of course, different people have different four words or 12 words or whatever the ritual is. They don't understand that that they're doing exactly like the people across the street. You know, it's sort of interesting to see that. But that's how fragmented we are at this time in human history. And in the third half, listen to that. In the third part of the book, I talk about that. I think we need the program that you are leading here. This is one of the ways that we need to get people talking as communities about these issues and expanding the circle so that more and more people will begin to say, well, let's take a look at this alternative view of history. It makes sense. The evidence is there. Why aren't we talking to people about it? And well, I'm hopeful that, you know, shows like yours and others will at least get more of us organized to communicate about these questions.
Shows like this are popping up all over, which is good, because there's a lot of really, really good information coming out from all of the programs. But people themselves, I still think, Paul, they have to find some way to really wake up. Like, you know, I have a hard time with the media, because the media controls people's minds for some reason.
Yep, that's
so
right.
I tell people, turn it off, you know, turn off the television, turn off the radio.
The media, you know, is the media is the corporation phenomenon, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing that they're constantly doing now, and I'm pretty sure that it's because our government is very afraid of people waking up, is that they want to keep everybody drugged. You know, there was an article that came out the other day, Paul, that it just sent me ballistics, and it was from California. And the governor there supposedly has signed a bill stating that the government there has the right to take a child, whether their parents knows it, doesn't know it, consent or does not consent, and vaccinate them.
Yeah, that's part of the problem.
And it is, you know, because that's, again, a way to control. Who knows what's in that vaccination, number one. You know, and I think people are very afraid to really take a look at what our government has done and what we're becoming as followers of the government. And a lot of people now are starting to get a little angry, but it isn't the anger that's going to make it or break it, I don't think, Paul. It's the knowledge from the heart and doing what really you need to do from within, more than just, like I said a little bit ago, following people because somebody wants to raise a stink about Wall Street.
Sure.
You know,
could I say something about,
sure,
you mentioned about the vaccination problem. I think that is an issue, but I think the broader issue is what I call the psychotropic drug problem. We now are medicating a huge percentage of this population in the United States with all kinds of depressants and anxiety prescriptions. We're starting now with children, doping people up in so many different ways. I have a psychiatrist, colleague, friend, Peter Bragan, who's done a great job in trying to get this kind of information out. But we're now seeing it in some of the even more mainstream media about the way we are affecting the minds of, you know, up to 50%, and in some populations even more than that, with these kinds of drugs. And that reduces our sense of responsibility. It reduces our responsibility as a society to actually work with people who have mental problems. We're just taking the easy way out and deadening the consciousness of our citizens. And this is part of the problem, because it is a corporate driven campaign to make us really consumers and robotic beings. And that's part of this issue.
Yeah, let me tell you, because you don't know, I actually lived in Chicago for most of my life, Paul. Mm-hmm. Then I got some channeling that came through me that said, you're going to move. I said, no, I'm not. They said, you're going to move and you're going to open a school. I said, no, I'm not. I don't know anything about opening a school. But I listen, because I usually listen to my inner voices. And what I did is I went and I got a 501c3 called the Child's Miracle Mind, Inc. And I got it for the sole purpose of helping people wake up when it comes to drugging their children. Then I got the hit that I needed to do this school. So I moved to New Mexico with one purpose in mind. That was to find land, find funding, build a school, open it, and run it the way it should be run. So I've got the land. Now I have to raise some money. But the school is called the School of Now. And it's designed, when it's finished, to accommodate 500 students, with 350 being live-in and 125 being day students. But the idea is to help these children that have been labeled, which are many labels out there, to get off of the labeling and get off the drugs so that they can actually be who they are and be all they can be without the restrictions of control or taking it away in general. And so that's what I'm doing. Okay.
Well, I want to applaud you and honor you for taking that initiative, because we need more and more people to take their lives into their own hands. You know, we've given up, as you said earlier, all the responsibility for everything. You know, for our children, for our community, for our environment, for the animals that we depend on, for the crops that we need to have to survive as healthy people. All of these things are there, and I happen to think that, and this is, of course, my own, you know, little theme in this book, but I think the development of supernatural religions, where you have a priesthood that controls people's thinking about what their obligations are and how they fit into the universe, into the natural order of things. And then those people who are willfully ignorant of the way things work in nature, then those people can be easily manipulated in the political process by corporate money to get politicians who want to reinforce this notion of, we don't need to do it ourselves. We don't need to take responsibility for the planet. We don't need to take responsibility for our climate, for our foods, et cetera, et cetera. It's up to the individual. And at the same time, they're creating, designing policies that keep people from being responsible and taking care of these issues. So we don't have a government that's functioning to bring about this kind of a new natural order of harmony between humans and being on this planet. We have the corporations who are not interested in that. And the human beings, the individual citizens who ought to be taking the initiatives, the kind of initiative that you've been taking, don't feel empowered to do so. And they think they're going to be bailed out by a supernatural God lifting them off, you know, in a cloud one day. And that's just such a self-defeating, self-deprecating view of reality that it's very disheartening to think that's where we are today in human history.
Yeah, it is. And so when I, you know, was basically told that that's what I was going to do, I did it, except I've got to raise the money now to build the school. But it will get done because it's very much needed. And it comes from the heart. It's not coming from greed or power. It's actually to help these children put this world back together because they are going to be the ones who put it back together. Not us. Not us. Because we've already been brainwashed too much. I mean, it's not that it's impossible for the adults to do it, but you're going to need a whole bunch of them to rewrite history here. Where the children, they already come here with the knowing. They already know that this is all wrong, and they already know they don't want to be part of it. So then those are the children that are said they don't focus, they don't know what they're doing, you know, they got to be put on drugs. Most of those children are highly, highly intelligent children who can't fit the vibrations that's going on the planet that they're here.
These are some of the most creative minds we have on the planet, probably, in terms of looking at alternatives, looking at, I mean, the reason they're labeled is because they question the status quo. Mm-hmm. And the only way we're going to solve the problems of the planet is to question the status quo. And we've got to say, wait a minute, you know, we've got some assumptions here about the nature of reality that aren't working. And I try to talk about concept of natural science, and I have a chapter in the book on that, the description of natural science versus this schizophrenic, you know, supernaturalism on one hand and materialistic science on the other. And the reason we have this materialistic science leads to the kind of psychiatric drug programs that we have today and all kinds of other initiatives that we've taken, looking only at the material side of things, we're a schizophrenic society. And somehow we've got to take a natural science and a multidimensional sense of the universe and bring that together with a different sense that we are not just humans that are alone in the universe and that we've just been around a few thousand years on this planet, but we have to get this idea that we are members of a large community of conscious beings, not only on our own planet and in our own solar system, but in the universe as a whole. And when we recognize that, we can learn from what we have in terms of the kind of history that I've been talking about. Most of the evidence and most of the books and so on from the past have been destroyed, but we still have enough to put together, I think, a reasonable picture of what we could be as a species. And if we can begin to envision that as we face the coming, what I call Earth changes or solar system or galaxy changes. I mean, this is the idea of the Mayan calendar having a sense of the galactic cycles. That is a very valuable concept. We've made a lot more of it than should be made, but it is a very good example of ancient knowledge about the cycles in the galaxy and how it moves around and has its ups and downs and ins and outs, and that we as conscious beings on a planet need to see ourselves as a part of that. And I think a lot of the people who are getting communications today from other dimensional beings, a lot of them are getting very positive help, helping us to see things more realistically. And it sounds like your inner knowing, your inner voices are a part of that, you know, that are nudging us to become who we really are, not these slaves and previously colonized humans who are subservient to any cult leader or priesthood or political theocrat or, you know, the kinds of authority-seeking people who are dominating the public discourse at this time. I'm sorry, I got sort of wound up on that, but
that's
I think we're there.
We are. Do me one favor, Paul, because we're really out of time, but quickly give out your website and how they can get your book.
Yeah. Well, the book is in, most of the bookstores today. It's been out now a few weeks, and it's on Amazon.com and print and Kindle. It's also in Barnes & Noble, the same thing with the Nook ebook there and the print. And so it's out there. And go to my website. It's just www.vonward.com. And you can also get books on there if you want to get them directly to be autographed or something like that. But they're out there, and a lot of people are interested in it. I'm very happy with the response that the publisher is getting to this this book. I'm happy that he was willing to publish it.
Great, Paul. It was great having you on the show. I have to cut us off because we took our time. But thank you for taking the time, and I love your book. I think everybody should get one.
Thanks so much. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and think about what we talked about. Take care. Bye now.